Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. We're on chapter 3 of the social system of Islam, which is part 3 as well, and this particular topic is discussing the Islamic form, the Islamic system of building a municipality. How should a city be run from the Islamic perspective? It's a very important issue because it discusses a variety of things, from the Islamic approach to how to have a Muslim or Islamic image as far as a city is concerned. And although we've discussed a lot of social elements to how we need to interact with other citizens in a city, we haven't discussed what the basis of this city should look like from an Islamic perspective. And Islam does have a lot to say when it comes to building, when it comes to the dividing of, for example, responsibilities and things like that. What the public space should be, what the private dominion should be. A lot of these other very, very interesting things to do with cultural centers, religious centers, educational facilities, hygiene, public cleanliness, how a house should be divided and things like that. So it is indeed an interesting topic to look into, and there's a lot that all of us can benefit from. Now, should your house be, for example, Islamic in the sense of it needs to look like how it used to look like at that time? No, we need to always bear in mind the issue of zaman and makan, space or place and time. And important thing is that there is an emphasis on the Islamic household being elegant, being clean, not being luxurious or extravagant. And there's a difference between luxurious and extravagant and elegant and clean. And that's why the hadith, even from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, he says, "Ubnu mada'inakum mushrifah." Well, you should build your cities mushrifa. Not mushrifa as in that ashrafi kind of noble class, the bourgeoisie class. No, mushrifa in the sense that it has value, that it has meaning. Which is why when it does come to something like building an Islamic house, you need to remember the shar'i side of things. Like, you know that it is haram for you to be facing the qibla, or you're back to the qibla when you are relieving yourself in the toilet. So you remember that the toilet seat should be built in such a way where it is not facing the qibla, nor it's back to the qibla.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al-Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Another example, you know, you want to make sure that the women in the household are comfortable. They don't need to be wearing hijab all the time, you know. So you build the house in such a way where if you do have a guest, the guest is not going to invade the privacy of the women. They don't need to be, you know, isolated in that particular sense. They have their freedom. They can do as they wish. And, you know, Islamic households in the traditional Islamic architectural sense did cater to all of these things. Now, one of the things that is important when it does come to the public services, because I did say that when you're building a city, you need to look at the public side of things. The public services is based, from an Islamic perspective, is based on gaining funds from the public Muslim treasury. So it is the duty of the Muslim treasury, of Baytul Mal, to cover the costs of whatever is needed for the public sphere. Now, where does the money from the Muslim funds come from? From the people themselves, from zakat, from khums, from sadaqat, from all of these other financial donations given by the Muslims themselves. And also, you can extend that to maybe investing in property or whatever it is that, you know, is possible for an Islamic municipality to do. In addition to this, even when there are, in the case of non-Muslims, a non-Muslim is not obliged to, in a Muslim society, in an Islamic country, a non-Muslim is not obliged to pay khums or zakat in that ideal sense, because, you know, there's no taklif directed at them. But instead of that, they pay the jizya. And the jizya is the equivalent of the wajib payments made by Muslims. Contrary to, unfortunately, how it is portrayed by Islamophobes, I must call them Islamophobes, who try to, you know, find the most weirdest of explanations for things and in a very perverted understanding misrepresent the reality of what it is and explain it in a harsh way that, of course, when the reader does read it, they would condemn Islam and condemn Muslims. But jizya is nothing more than what is wajib for a Muslim to pay. So you expect Muslims to pay in an Islamic, a purely Islamic society, or government, you expect Muslims to pay everything, and non-Muslims, for example, living under the sovereignty of Muslim land or Islamic government, pays absolutely nothing. No, it doesn't make sense. So it's rather the opposite. It's always been the case where non-Muslims were very, very comfortable for hundreds of years. If there were cases of payment of jizya and things like that, they would do it wholeheartedly. We need to remember that when it does come to the issue of Baytul Mal or the Muslim treasury, this is a very, very sensitive topic as well, you know, because Baytul Mal is no joke. It's the public funds. It's something that a person will be very much held accountable for on Judgment Day. And that's why there are so many ahadith that speak about how Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam dealt with Baytul Mal and the sensitivity of Baytul Mal. You know, there are many, many stories from the likes of, for example, Imam Ali salamullahi alayhi, and when he was the Khalifa, and how he dealt with Baytul Mal. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, ooh. walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.